I'm Peyton Wessner, host of Watching with Wessner, credentialed media of the Missouri Valley Conference and American Athletic Conference, as well as Indianapolis Indians and Louisville Bats for your AAA coverage. Welcome back. Episode 26. It's been a very interesting day. A lot of NBA to get into. Phil Jackson out of New York. Chris Paul into Houston. Also, of course, it wouldn't be a Watching with Wessner without some MMA talk. Chris Cyborg has a new opponent. Francis Ngannou and Junior Dos Santos will lock it up at UFC 215. Also, we'll get to it. Peyton's polls. I forgot to do that on Monday. We'll get into all of that from the latest weekend of MMA, as well as what's weird. We have an interesting one today that involves airplanes and travel. You will not want to miss it. So let's get right down to it. Chris Paul is now a member of the Houston Rockets. Adrian Wojnarowski of The Vertical reported, Chris Paul will be traded from Los Angeles to Houston in return for Patrick Beverley, Montrezl Harrell, Lou Williams, Sam Decker, as well as a future first-round pick. It is protected. I believe it's 2018 first-round pick. It's a good haul for the Clippers. Really, I think the Clippers may have got the better end of the deal. But let's focus on Houston for a moment. With Chris Paul and James Harden, you're going to have two of the best guards in the NBA. How will they mesh? How will they mesh? It's a very simple question, but complex in regard to, these are two point guards. James Harden is officially a point guard now. That's where he played last season. He played as a point guard. Going elsewhere, they have some very good pieces. Clint Capella, they did keep him, although Montrezl Harrell is on his way to the City of Angels. You do have other good weapons. That's what I'm getting to with Houston. You have Trevor Ariza, Ryan Anderson, also Eric Gordon coming off the bench. That's a very good six-man rotation when you mix in, of course, the two superstars in Chris Paul and James Harden. Chris Paul, 18 points per game last year, 5 rebounds, 9 assists. He knows how to play basketball. Of course, he's never been to the Western Conference Finals. That could be an issue. Look, come April, some people are superstitious and wonder if his character is in the way. Dan Dockage of ESPN, the former University of Indiana Hooper, Indiana University Hooper, he called Chris Paul a fraud, specifically in regard to his inability to lead a team when the going gets tough, the ship begins to sink. With the Chris Paul trade, it is essential for Houston to re-sign Nene. Nene, with Harrell gone, you need another post player that can take some of the stress of minutes off Ryan Anderson and Clint Capella. Clint Capella, of course, he's young. He will get into foul trouble. And if you have someone like Nene, who has been very well, he averaged 9 points in 18 minutes. Basically, a half point a minute. And that's the math behind that. You bring him in, he may get some more minutes, even if he doesn't. He's very capable, he's seasoned, he's veteran. And he's the kind of player that will help you against San Antonio in the Western Conference semifinals. Or Golden State in the Western Conference Finals. Houston, with LaMarcus Aldridge, I mentioned this on a prior episode, San Antonio's future becomes a little more cloudy. You're taking away one of the best post players in the game. Someone I consider when he gets into the post and uses his post moves as well as his ability to step out and hit the 18-foot jumper. The best post player in the game. Without him, San Antonio regresses. Then it becomes essential to get Paul George. And Paul George, who knows where he's going to land? You hear rumblings that he will stay in Cleveland as long as LeBron. He wants to play with LeBron. Of course, everyone wants to play with LeBron just as everyone wants to play in Golden State. It's the boring aspect in the NBA right now. It's a boredom the fans will have to endure for who knows how long. I think it could be the next 5 years for the NBA's sake and for the fans, including myself. I hope it's a lot shorter of a time period than 5 years. Going into the Clippers and their haul, this is not too shabby of a haul. let's put the draft pick aside. It's protected. It's not going to be one through three. Maybe it's a four, but Houston will be at the top of the Western Conference. So it's going to be a 28-26 within the first round. If they re-sign Blake Griffin, this is a very capable team that can compete at the top of the Western Conference. You're going to have Griffin. You would have, of course, Blake Griffin maybe going elsewhere, signing as a free agent. You're going to have DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin. You also have Jamal Crawford, Austin Rivers you mix in there. I'm not a big fan of Austin Rivers. I'll get into the drama between Chris Paul and Doc Rivers, which involves Austin, in just a moment. You mix in Patrick Beverley, a very defensive savvy, hard-nosed point guard. Lou Williams, who knows how to score the basketball. You have a quality team. A team that will most likely sit, as the Clippers did, around the 4 or 5 spot in the Western Conference. Chris Paul's resentment for Doc Rivers began with Austin Rivers, of course. Austin Rivers ended up getting a big contract. He earned $11 million this past season. Believe it or not, look at the contract. He has a player option for not this season, but the next. He would get $12.6 million. He's not worth that. Chris Paul, I would assume the monetary value of the contract goes into his hatred, which was reported by Michael Eaves of ESPN. Another element is the playing time. Austin Rivers played more minutes per game than Jamal Crawford and Raymond Felton. There's no reason in the world Austin Rivers should be playing more minutes than Jamal Crawford. Raymond Felton, he's veteran, he's seasoned. He shouldn't be playing any more minutes than him either. That was the case this past season. Also, if you remember correctly, there was a trade deadline. There was rumors swirling around whether the Clippers would land Carmelo Anthony. They would not have to give up Chris Paul. They would not have to give up Blake Griffin. Would not have to give up DeAndre Jordan. Austin Rivers was one of the pieces they would have to give up. And with that, the deal fizzled. It never came into fruition. Carmelo Anthony remains a Knick. And Austin Rivers remains a part of the Clippers. It's a rebuilding state for LA, is what I've also heard today. I wouldn't go that far. They do have pieces. I named them just now. But losing Chris Paul because you basically didn't want to part way with your son, that's something that will possibly haunt Clippers fans and at least get them to think, why was Austin Rivers valued more than a chance at a championship? Would Carmelo Anthony have led the Clippers to the NBA Finals? Who knows? We'll never know. You would have had a big four. You would have had two very good defensive players, post players in the front court, and Jordan and Griffin. Griffin ended up getting hurt, and that derailed everything. We don't know. But that was the moment. It seems to me where everything derailed, and Chris Paul decided L.A. was not the place for him anymore. With Chris Paul moving to L.A., you also have another move, but out east. The former coach of the L.A. Lakers and Chicago Bulls, Phil Jackson, is not at the helm of the New York Knicks any longer. He was fired by owner James Dolan today. Phil Jackson did a very, very poor job managing the New York Knicks. That's without question, without debate. And let's go into it. His first year, he took over in 2014. Think about this. $60 million is what he has earned from this position. He only worked a little over 3 years. His first draft, he had a pick 34th pick is what he had. He picked Anthony Early of Wichita State, a player that I got to see a lot in my Missouri Valley Conference coverage. A very good player. 34th pick is a little too high. And by picking him, you ended up passing on Jerami Grant, Dwight Powell, and the player that has become one of the great young players. Great may be a little of an overstatement, but a good young player out for Los Angeles, Jordan Clarkson. All three of those players ended up passing by Phil Jackson by him picking Clay Anthony early. He can't argue with Kristaps Porzingis, although there was a lot of disgruntled Knicks fans because of the overseas pick. He's the future of the New York Knicks. Speaking of which, that's another element which really had Phil Jackson asking for him to be fired. Why would you trade Kristaps Porzingis? Possibly the Phoenix, Boston, it doesn't matter, but why would you even put him on the trade block? It's only his second season. He's involved and became... his game has evolved so much in 2 short years. No one expected this kind of growth and maturity from him in such a short span. He also fell asleep during workouts. And then the final thing. You draft Frank Ntilikina over Dennis Smith with the 8th overall pick in the 2017 NBA draft. What are you doing there? Dennis Smith? I wanted the Orlando Magic to take him with the 6th overall pick, but you don't take him with the 8th? Speaking of which, there's probably going to be a New York Knicks Phil Jackson curse because Ntilikina ended up injuring his knee first workout. That news broke after the decision to part ways. Phil Jackson and the New York Knicks organization decided to part ways. He passed on Dennis Smith, Luke Kennard, Malik Monk. The list goes on and on. For Frank Ntilikina, who will be scrutinized and watched for the entirety of his career. That's the last draft pick Phil Jackson, the last big draft pick Phil Jackson had. Probably as in his time as an executive. I don't see him getting rehired anywhere. I don't care if it's Orlando. I wouldn't mess with that. Frank Ntilikina. He will ever be linked to Phil Jackson. His decline, as I mentioned, started with his first draft pick, Clay Anthony Early. He also had Ron Baker, another player I got to see a lot in my Missouri Valley Conference coverage at Wichita State. Undrafted free agent. He was not drafted in the 60 picks last year. He started 13 games. 13 games for New York last year. That just shows you the punity and the poor state of the New York Knicks franchise in the last season. You had Ron Baker start 13 games. He played well. Can't discredit the young man for that. But Ron Baker, an undrafted free agent, was your starting point guard. He was in the backcourt. If you are a New York Knicks fan, I suppose this is a one-year audition, because Carmelo Anthony is an unrestricted free agent following the 2018-2019 season. Excuse me, it'd be a two-year audition to try to get Carmelo to stay. I don't see that likely. He literally drafted Frank Ntilikina over an athletic point guard who was proven at the tough ACC level. New York Knicks, kind of like the Los Angeles Clippers were, just sinking ship. And I suppose Phil Jackson, maybe that's why he made all of these very ignorant and trivial and questionable decisions. He was yearning for his resignation. He didn't want to resign, however. He wanted to get canned, and that he did today. Let's move on to some MMA talk. Late last night, I was on the way home from Indianapolis covering the Indianapolis Indians game. Chris Cyborg has another new opponent, and I do not agree with it at all. If you may remember correctly, Jermaine Duranime is the inaugural UFC featherweight champion. She won the belt at UFC 208. She beat Holly Holm, the former bantamweight champion, who beat Ronda Rousey. She won by basically illegal strikes. 2 strikes happened after the horn. No point was taken, which would have tied the match and would have resulted in a draw. She didn't want to fight Cyborg. It was petty. No need to rehash it for Monday. So we have a match with Megan Anderson, Invicta FC champion, a very young prospect, 27-year-old from Australia. Very talented. The next generation of featherweights. A lot of people thought she had the makeup to beat Chris Cyborg. That was ignorant on their behalf. I'm sure you'll hear more of it when the matchup does eventually come into fruition. But she had to pull out. She cited personal reasons. My thoughts are to her, as it had to be something very serious for her to pull herself from the biggest match and matchup and probably payday of her professional career. No Kat Zingano. That was the rumored match when Duraname was stalling. No Jermaine Duraname, of course. No Megan Anderson. So where do we go? You would think Holly Holm, who just murked Beth Kohea in Melbourne. Or excuse me, Singapore. It was in Singapore. That would be the logical pick. It'd be your third UFC fight, or excuse me, not fight, but championship fight, excluding her one title defense. It seemed like a perfect matchup. They wanted to see Holly Holm and Chris Cyborg. It'd be the counterpuncher versus the Bull. The Matador versus the Bull. But instead we go with Tanya Evinger. Not thrilled at all. This is a UFC 214 card. That had me excited. You have Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier at the top. This is the third scheduled matchup for them since April of 2016. This is going to be the co-main event. You have a youngster versus arguably the greatest women's mixed martial artist of all time. It's a good matchup. Can't argue it. Tanya Evinger is going to fill in. Brett Okamoto of ESPN reported. Great reporting on his behalf, as always. This is an awful matchup. And this is the worst start to any division, the worst start to the UFC featherweight division possible. Possible. You have Jermaine Duraname, who's unwilling to defend her belt. She's going to go down to 135 pounds and probably wilt because she's never going to beat Amanda Nunes. She doesn't have the makeup. She doesn't have the athletic makeup to beat Amanda Nunes, as well as the skills and attributes and talent, too. So you bring in Tanya Evinger, Invicta FC champion. Not at 145 pounds. No. Bantamweight, 135 pounds. What? So why didn't we go with Kat Zingano or Holly Holm? Even Raquel Pennington, she's on a good run right now. No, we go with Tanya Evinger. She has a lot of fight experience. She's on a 10-fight win streak, which looks good. But then you look at her record against the active UFC roster. She's 1-3. Yes, her last loss to a UFC, Invicta FC alum to go to the UFC was in 2013. That was the last loss of her. That's the last loss coming into this fight. I'm unsure what my thoughts are on this. Obviously, I don't agree. I don't like how this is going to be the co-main event. I don't believe it's... It feels like Lena Landsberg all over again. You're throwing in a fighter. Sure, she has a good track record against very anemic opponents. Against the great lioness that is Chris Cyborg. It's a matchup that has me not wanting to buy the pay-per-view card. That may sound a little harsh. I'm going to end up purchasing it anyway. I need to see Jon Jones, Daniel Cormier, the rematch. It's hard for me to get my thoughts together on this because I really felt if there was going to be any cancellations, and perhaps they reached out to Holly Holm and it would be too quick of a turnaround since she did fight earlier this month, that would have been the best matchup and you would have gained some people that would buy into that. That don't know possibly who Chris Cyborg is, but do know who Holly Holm is thanks to her success against Ronda Rousey and her head kicking her basically into retirement because that Amanda Nunes performance was god-awful. This is unbelievable to me. That her losses, Sarah McMahon, Alexis Davis twice, she doesn't even have any edge in terms of physically against Cyborg. She's 1 inch shorter. She has one inch less of a reach. Small disadvantages, of course. disadvantages nonetheless. Megan Anderson, that just seemed like the perfect matchup. You're going to bring Invicta, the last two Invicta FC featherweight champions. It's legitimately a real UFC featherweight title, unlike Jermaine Duraname and all the controversy that smothered and sank her victory thanks to her illegal strikes. But Tanya Evinger, fantastic fighter at Invicta FC. Those skills will not translate to the UFC. If she does defeat Chris Cyborg, that would be the biggest upset in women's martial arts history. It's a matchup that it seems like you're throwing in a lamb to a lioness. Awful matchup. Awful matchmaking. I would love to... I hope someone finds out if Kat Zingano was offered the fight, Holly Holm. It seems like the UFC rushed this one. They rushed this match just to save everything. You need Chris Cyborg fighting. Her contract is on a time... It has a time limit. It's not a certain number of fights that ends her time at the UFC. It's rushed. You don't want to remove the talent of Chris Cyborg from the car, but it's a match that has me shaking my head. You can obviously tell I have no use for this kind of match up. We'll have to see. It's going to happen. But the UFC's praying right now that John Jones, Daniel Cormier 2 does not have any bumps as it has in April 2016 at UFC 198, as well as at UFC 200. We can't forget about that. And speaking of the UFC 214 card, it may be picking up a fight that helps the ratings in case there is some kind of mishap, whether it's a missed weight cut or a failed drug test. And that's with Robbie Lawler and Cowboy Cerrone. That fight is no longer at UFC 213. Donald Cowboy Cerrone has an injury. It is most likely pushed back to UFC 214 and will not be happening on July 8th. That's the premise of this report. It was done by Luke Thomas of MMA Fighting, another great MMA journalist, if you need to look at follows Luke Thomas, Brett Okamoto, Ariel Helwani, of course. This is the second cancellation for this bout, UFC 205. It was Robbie Lawler that could not endure such a quick turnaround. He was knocked out at UFC 201 last July against Tyrone Woodley. It was a quick and very brutal knockout in which Woodley won the belt. Both are on one fight losing streaks. That is perfect matchmaking right there. A perfect example. Old management did that. That fight was made by the old matchmaker. We have new matchmakers, we have new UFC brass, and they clearly, apparently, is probably the better term, do not know what the best matchups are, do not know what they're really doing. This is going to be a positive for UFC 214. It will get more people to buy the pay-per-view, I believe. You have two very well-known names and personalities. Cowboy's more of a personality. Lawler does all his talking inside the cage. I can't speak enough about this matchup. They're going to throw a lot of haymakers, kicks. It's a matchup that is a ticking time bomb. It's going to be fantastic. I cannot speak enough. I can't even tell you. I can't even fathom who's going to win that match. This may be the blessing and the saving grace of the UFC. UFC OKC actually did not oust Bellator 180. That wasn't the pay-per-view. That was the spike prelims in ratings this weekend. It was 901,000 people watched Bellator 180 compared to 819 for UFC OKC, Michael Chiesa versus Kevin Lee. While this will help UFC 214 in case of a bout cancellation, injury, failed drug test. We've mentioned all the possible scenarios. You already know them with John Jones in the mix. And Daniel Cormier, a.k.a. training. Isn't it great? UFC 213 has a big gaping hole. That was a card that was claimed to be one of the best cars of the year, which is hard to imagine because besides the slow start, the headliner by Stipe Miocic and Junior Dos Santos, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, and Jessica Andrade as the co-main event, that card lived up to expectations. So with this, you have four fighters between the main event and the co-main event, three of which have not been marketed and may not be known to the people that do not watch as closely. And MMA purists is what I like to call them. The only person that you've probably heard of is Amanda Nunes, and that's only because she obliterated Ronda Rousey last December. With that being said, this could be a flopping pay-per-view. You also have Alistair Overeem, Fabricio Werdum. Heavyweight fans will buy it and tune into that, of course, because that will most likely set up the next title challenger for Stipe Miocic, who will be going for his record-breaking, for the division, title defense, his third as the heavyweight champion. This will be an interesting month. On Monday, I mentioned seven fights to keep an eye on, and some of them didn't even come from these pay-per-views. The numbers, UFC 213 and UFC 214, what the numbers will be, that'll be interesting to see the ratings and even compare them to Bellator NYC. I thought that card was entertaining. It had veterans, it had some young guns. Bellator had a great showing. And the next two pay-per-views of the UFC have some uncertainty. Of course, if Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier make it to Fight Night, people will buy in. But what if not? After all, the track record of these two fighting, 1-3, 33%. This is the fourth try. Let's see if we can get fight number two. A bout that was announced today, Francis Ngannou versus Junior Dos Santos. This will happen in September in Edmonton, at UFC 215. Francis Ngannou, of course, is the next rising prospect in the heavyweight division of a very knockout specialist. With Derek Lewis going down, he's the cream of the crop prospect in the heavyweight division. Junior Dos Santos is coming off his loss to Stipe Miocic at UFC. And that number always escapes me. I'm sorry about that. This fight will... I don't like this matchup. And I know I'm complaining about the matchups today, but I really want to see Mark Hunt versus Junior Dos Santos. I mentioned that immediately after Mark Hunt's victory over Derek Lewis. Those are two veteran fighters. Junior Dos Santos has yet to have a winning streak since he defended the belt. And that was in 2012. He's had some brutal fights. The win against Stipe Miocic that could have went either way via decision. That was an all-out war. He's also had some very nasty knockouts. Kane out of Velasquez, Alistair Overeem, Stipe Miocic this May. Those are going to start taking a toll. And the Junior Dos Santos that we will see may not be the best, and may not be the champion that we all remember. With that being said, if Ngannou comes out there and rolls over him like a Mack truck, how much value will you hold in that? A lot of people, this will be truly his first significant test. With Junior Dos Santos' history, which I cannot really reemphasize enough, three knockouts, he's alternated wins and losses since 2012. I suppose he's in line for a win if that pattern continues. Ngannou, until he beats Alistair Overeem and Fabricio Werdum, even Stipe Miocic, if he gets the title opportunity, he's unproven in my eyes. I may be a little bit of a hater. I'm not trying to be. That's just how I feel about it. Mark Hunt would be that would have probably maybe been a better matchup. See if Francis Ngannou is truly better than Derek Lewis, who he berated on social media after Lewis's exhausted victory or defeat, falling to exhaustion to Mark Hunt. Derek Lewis is coming out of retirement, which is a positive for this division. You would hate to see such a talented fighter hang it up. He needs a break. He needs a break. It's as simple as that. He has fought six times since February 2016. That's way too much for a heavyweight. He's only been in the fourth round once in his professional career. That is where his improvement needs to take place. During this break, he needs to improve his cardio. If he does not improve his cardio, he is simplified to a knockout specialist. Knockout specialists don't win the belt too often. You need to have the ability to go into the fifth round, go into the championship rounds, and have no problem competing, and competing at a high level. After all, champions are not born, in my opinion. They're made. And through your training is where Derek Lewis will have to be made and molded into a champion. Tons of potential. Ngannou, rather, he definitely has potential as well. I would have rather seen him fight. That's just, if you're going to call this the first big test, why don't you just put him against the loser of Overeem and Werdum, which takes place at UFC 213, July 8th. You could have waited 10 days. The UFC knows this matchup is favorable for Ngannou. He's young, and he has not taken the head trauma and the chin withering as JDS. That's it, Peyton's polls. I failed to mention them yesterday. My apologies for that. This is from the weekend. Let's start off. Is James Gallagher truly the next Conor McGregor? 42% of the audience says he's do it in the UFC, then we'll talk. James Gallagher, he ended up beating Chinzo Machida over the weekend. Cut through him like a knife through butter. He is the next rising prospect in MMA. Not just Bellator, in MMA, in the featherweight division. Very talented young Irishman, the prodigy of Conor McGregor. He talks like Conor McGregor, too. Do you agree with the Bellator 180 decision, referring to Bader's split decision victory over Phil Davis? I agree with it. I had it 48-47 in favor of the Arizona State wrestler. 47% of the audience said no. They thought the Penn State alum, Phil Davis, ended up edging Ryan Bader. Don't really know how you see that, but appreciate you, the audience, for sharing their perspective. Is Matt Mitrione the Batman we deserve? I surely think so, but 47% of the audience says, what are you talking about? Matt Mitrione was wearing a Batman shirt coming into Madison Square Garden on Saturday. You weren't watching the pay-per-view if you didn't see that. Is Michael Chandler obligated to an immediate rematch? 63% of the audience says, well, yeah. Brent Primus won the light heavyweight belt. Michael Chandler still thinks he's champion. Because his ankle was not broken. It was nerve damage from the trauma that the leg kicks took. And I would say less the leg kicks and more him rolling his ankle going backwards. Michael Chandler believes the belt is still in his possession. He's going to have to win it back. And if he doesn't... So I was talking to a very intelligent MMA fan. And they said, will Michael Chandler maybe make the move to the UFC if he doesn't get the belt back? And that possibility never entered my head. That's a great point. We'll have to see. But Brent Primus better bring the best Brent Primus he has if he wants to beat an angry and revenge-filled Michael Chandler. So is Bellator NYC worth the money? 53% said it wasn't bad. I surely think it really lived up to the promotional aspect, the marketing. Had great analysts. Great color commentary, great fighters. Well-rounded event. And finally, should BJ Penn retire? 80% says, yeah, it's over. I agree with everyone on that. BJ Penn, do not lose your legacy by taking brutal matchups. I suppose Dennis Seaver, that was a very equal and fair matchup. Don't hang around too long. Otherwise, everything you worked for, your lightweight champion, your welterweight champion, championship, it's gone. Let's go to what's weird. This is where we see what's going on, not only in the sports world, but the world in general. In China, Shanghai more specifically, Huffington Post reports an elderly lady threw 9 coins into an airplane's engine for good luck. Only one out of the 9 ended up going into the engine of the airplane. Very scary situation. You don't see that in America, thank God, and that's because there isn't any loading on the tarmac. You don't come out onto the runway to load into your airplane. You go from your gate onto your airplane. There's no middleman, as there are in some small airports in the United States, and in this case in China. The plane ended up being grounded for 4 hours. That had to be very frightening for those who were other passengers on the plane, seeing the possibility of what was she throwing in there? What's going to happen? Thank God nothing bad did happen. And that's 80-year-old ladies. Aren't they great? And that's your what's weird. Don't throw, and just a life tip, don't throw coins into airplane engines, kids. If you do, it's probably not going to be good, even if you think it's for good luck. So that's it for today's episode of Watching with Westerner, episode 26. Good episode. We'll be back tomorrow morning. I'll post the time on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at PC Westerner, WESNER, for any updates for future shows, as well as if you want any minor league baseball coverage. We'll be talking baseball tomorrow. And there will be a new segment at the end. So I hope you can make it. I'm Peyton Westerner. Thank you for tuning in. God bless, my friends.